Can we call the meeting to order, please? Okay, welcome, everybody. We have a small and select board tonight. There's three of us here, but we have a quorum, so that's good. And we'll just get ahead and I'm calling the meeting to order. I would like to just say that Lynn Canfield's Aunt Carol passed away last week. And Lynn, we've been thinking of you, and our thoughts are with you and your family. Stephanie, roll call. This will be short.
Joyce Dill.
Here.
Phil Krine. Deb Roush.
Here.
Mike Smith. Sue Suter.
Here. Okay. Next, any additions to the agenda? Nope. Okay. And then next, citizen input. So we're opening this up to folks. We've got a good turnout tonight. That's great. If you would say your name and the organization that you represent, please.
I'm Linda Tortorelli, and I represent both the autism program at the university and Community Choices. So just two brief things. One, if you're not already aware, the autism program is not in the governor's budget, so we are slated to be annihilated, I guess, completely statewide. Our local portion of that is $204,000 a year to keep the autism program running here at the U of I. So right now, we do not have any other funding alternatives to keep our doors open. We are meeting with various other entities to look at other possibilities if there was some in the community. But we are the first, last, and only training, information, education, referral resource for families that have a child with autism. Both of our hospitals that have diagnostics do not have any of their own parent education and rely on our program solely as their educational component for their families and training. So we are meeting. We have a meeting scheduled next week with Carl, and I'm going to reach out to Christy as well and just help them be aware that with and when we go away that they will not have any other in-house way currently to educate families. When a child is newly diagnosed with autism, the very first referral is to me and to our program as their what they do for autism and education. So that's just a little bit of what we do in the community and some of the ways I'm trying to look for alternative funding to keep our program running. We serve about 1,000 families a year through our resource room. I do at least 30 trainings in the community for schools, professionals, all kinds of folks. And we also have a diagnostic component. So I won't go into all the details of the things that we do, but right now, every which way we're looking at it, it does not look promising that that is going to be somehow put back in the budget. So that's TAP. On a brighter note, I had an opportunity to be at the Housing Authority today because my son received a housing voucher notification, which we needed to move forward on, providing all the other information about him being disabled. I did have the opportunity to meet with Charles Morton, who is the head of the Section 8 housing, what is now called the Housing Choice Voucher Program, used to be Section 8, and helped him understand a little bit about what we're doing with in the community with supportive housing. He was familiar with Lori Baker a little bit. And he informed me that when they opened that waiting list last couple months ago, they had 1,100 people that then were put into the waiting list. If you remember previously, they shut that waiting list off at about 400. So there was 1,100 more folks that were added to that list. Of that, they had a draw of 700 people. So 700 people received letters in the last week. It is a very short turnaround time. If anybody is supporting individuals with mental health issues or developmental disabilities, please be aware that they should have received that letter in the mail this last week. And they have to have all documentation in properly by March 31st. So if anybody's going on spring break next week, it doesn't give them much time to get it in and get it in properly. The letter is not very clear about everything that you're supposed to do. That's why I went in person today and found out that you have to show up in person with a copy of your original birth certificate and your original Social Security card. So that might stall people in even finding those documents. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. Also, Mr. Morton believes that of the 700 people that were pulled, probably he'd be lucky if 250 people met the criteria. Because the new criteria is that unless you're in an exempt class, and being disabled is an exempt class, you have to be employed at 20 hours a week minimally for 12 consecutive months. If you do not reach that employment criteria, you are not going to qualify for a voucher this time. Also, if you don't meet that deadline to March 31st, you will be thrown off the list, and then you can have the opportunity to reapply when the list opens. So he was being very clear with me that they're going to be very strict, and they're looking for people that can follow through on deadlines and get things done, and that they're going to be able to mostly work unless you meet criteria for one of the exempted categories. Being over 55 and some other things were in there as well, veterans, but as it pertains to the population we're interested in, being disabled but having proof of that disability is necessary as well. So just thought I would share that news that I found out today. And as soon as those 700 people are processed and they don't meet their quota, they will be reopening the waiting list. And he felt like that would happen fairly quickly in the next several months. So be watching for the waiting list to open again. If you know you had your individual on the waiting list, but you weren't selected, and they have a developmental disability, it would be helpful if you let maybe us at Community Choices know. They're really trying to figure out what the need is in the community. And so if you've been on that list, but you weren't drawn, they really kind of want to know if you meet one of those exempt criteria. And also they're looking to us to ask our members, at least at Community Choices, how many people missed the opportunity to apply to that list that would qualify in that exempt criteria. So I think a lot of entities, we met with the city recently, they're trying to figure out, asking us to give them some numbers of individuals that are coming or waiting for housing and would take advantage of those opportunities as well. So we've put out an email to our group and we're trying to get a better sense of that as well. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda,
yes.
Before you leave,
yep.
You're meeting with Carl and you're meeting with Christy for funding, is that correct?
I haven't set up my appointment with Christy because I'm not quite sure who to reach out to, but I did have a name at Carl that is part of their foundation that does, you know, that kind of work. So I have a meeting with her next Thursday.
Okay, because the service that you've offered and you've given all these years has been for practically nothing for them. I think it would behoove them.
It has
them.
Been for nothing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I think it would behoove them to give you funding for this particular thing. So if
well,
there's
thank you
anything,
for your support, and I will it, you
I
know.
Was just going to tell you, if there's anything we can do, let us know.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Hi, my name is Sheila Krine, and I am a member of the County Transition Planning Committee, and which just hosted a transition roundtable this past Friday. And I wanted to publicly thank all of the organizations and agencies that were there. Many of them are here that had representatives, and many of them do receive DDB and MHB funding. They were able to give parents, teachers, other professionals a really good idea of all the services or of a lot of the services in the county, and I don't know how much about, you know, where the gaps were. I think that they, you know, the parents were understanding that, I think it was really good because everything's changed so much in the last 5 to 10 years, and, you know, people with, this was transition age youth and for adults, and so especially people who had adults and that were there too, that things are just very different and it might be a little bit harder to get services than it was, say, 10 years ago. So We had a really good turnout. I was hoping to see more of you, but but thank you.
Thanks, Sheila. Any other public comments? I'll just say, and I know Peter wants to say something too. Linda, to what you talked about as well, we realize that this is a very draconian budget this year, and we will be looking at ways to address that as the board and take a stand on that.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Linda, I was so very sorry to hear that you're on the chopping block. Hopefully, the legislature will deal with this, but I do think that we have to take a position because the way this state budget looks, it's going to have a horrible impact on people with disabilities, and I think we have to take a public position basically opposing the budget as it's written.
Okay. Gary.
Can you turn the microphone on, Gary?
I am a non-voting member, but I am the county board liaison to this board. And what Peter said kind of dovetails a little bit into what I'd hoped to say this evening. And it has to do with efficiencies, consolidation of services, and that sort of thing. I just recently finished reading the December 2014 interim report by University on Access Initiative. And one of the things that stood out to me, and there'll be other things I'll probably be addressing in time, but it really applies to what is going on with the governor's budget and budgets in general. But on page 24 of the report, in year four, the university folks surveyed 424 staff members and 74 administrators of 16 organizations who are all dealing with severely emotionally disturbed youth. Just as a layman, it looks to me like there probably could be some efficiencies achieved by a lot of these agencies consolidating some of their programs and working together, and I would encourage them to do that in the coming years. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. And I think when we look at the proposals that we receive as a board, that's one of the things that we can be looking at. I think we're going to have to look at resources and the best use in our community.
Just, Gary, we haven't agreed on much recently, but I have to say I agree with you on this one. And I can tell you that when we first started with the Access Initiative, there was some discussion about consolidation of agencies. And it's a very difficult thing to get people to sort of agree to do that. And I think that to some degree, now the budget situation is going to force consolidation. So, but just a comment. I mean, that's something that we've looked at and tried to encourage in the past. And I agree that we should be thinking about that.
Thank you, Peter. I will be working and addressing more of this report in the coming weeks. And I've also looked at some of the grant applications for Access, and will be making further comments as it seems appropriate. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Okay, we're going to move on to our study session now, and Darlene Klopel is going to talk about new federal legislation, workforce, and update us on that. And Darlene, welcome.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate having you here today.
Okay. The Regional Planning Commission is the local administrator for the Workforce Investment Act services currently. It covers a 4-county area, including Champaign County. The other counties are Piatt, Iroquois, and Ford. And we will be impacted by this new law, so we're trying to keep up to date on what the new rules are going to be, and then also do some presentations in the community for other people who would be interested in the changes. We have partners in this. The Workforce Investment Act is an act of the government, which is a Title I program. if you're familiar with government, the government rules. The other partners have been in the past people that are currently located at our one-stop center over on Mattis Street, which are the Department of Rehab Services, the Department of Employment Security, and the local community college. Also, there are other partners that are not located in the building, which have been mandated in the past, which include things like the Migrant Council, Experience Works, which is the senior employment program. So basically anything that brings down employment-related services was required several years, actually about 12 years ago, to participate in the Workforce Investment Act. The problem with the act at that time was that the WIA services, Title I services, were held responsible for the accountabilities of the program in terms of training and employing people. The other programs had nothing changed in their laws at the time. And so it's been kind of a weird partnership over the past 10 years. And we're all located in the same building, and we do have similar goals in some ways, but it's been a little bit of a struggle to get us to actually work together. So we do have a board that meets. It's called the Workforce Investment Board, and we meet. We're a local board. Work together, but the WIOA, it's called the WIOA, or in other places just call it the Opportunities Act, is going to make some changes to that. So at the federal level, the laws of all of the agencies that are required partners have now changed. And so this is the Reauthorization Act for the Title I services, but it also made changes in the other Title II, Title III, and those acts as well. So they are now different kind. We're partnering. We can partner in different ways, and it's actually required by all the entities to participate. And we will jointly be responsible for outcomes. So that's the biggest change. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit about specifically, just a little bit of the history of it, and then how it would affect the populations that you guys are mostly concerned with. So the new act is called. We're calling it WIOA. Some places just call it the Opportunities Act. It replaces the Workforce Investment Act. It also amends the other acts that have to do with Title II, Title III, the Adult Education and Family Literacy, the Wagner-Payser Act, and the Rehabilitation Act, which are the other three major partners, but then also the minor partners that are involved with that. It combines many of the current federal workforce investment, economic development, and employment assistance programs in an effort to connect job seekers. The main goal of the act is to connect job seekers to employers in needed business sectors. So some of the partners provide training, some of the partners provide job search, some of the partners provide unemployment services, but they're all related to connecting people looking for jobs with available jobs in the areas that are needed in our region. And those vary slightly from region to region. So we are in this 4-county area, but we are in central Illinois is really our region. And so there may be a little slightly different kinds of jobs or needs in our community that are different from Chicago, say, or other areas of the state or the nation. Our office is located at 1307 North Mattis, Champaign. Some of you know it as the old Kmart building, but or Kay's Merchandise building. But it's been the one-stop center for it's been going on its 13th year now. And I can say that because I was involved way back when they formed that one-stop center and helped the partners come up with their first strategic plan. So it's basically hasn't experienced a lot of changes in the last 13 years. We do still have silos. Speaking to Gary's comments earlier, is that even though the agencies are located in the same building, because the funding streams were very different and there was not the common accountabilities, there still are silos of the services that are offered there. There's referral back and forth, and because we're located there, we do help each other, but we have not really formed what I would call a system of services for workforce development yet. So that's the next phase in the Opportunities Act. That's what they want to do, is take these agencies and make some sort of system of services for people that are looking for work. We do have a head start because we are already co-located. In many areas when the first act was passed, they did not co-locate services. And so you may know in other communities, if you know around the state, perhaps the WIA office was located in the same office as the employment office, but DOORS was not there, or those kind of things. So we do have a little bit of a head start with that already. The governance is the CEOs of the counties that we serve. So the county board chairs of the four counties that we serve are the CEOs of our corporation, our nonprofit group. It does have an official set of bylaws. It has an official board. The CEOs are the official governance board. And then there is a local, what's called the Workforce Investment Board, or now it will be called the WIOA Board. It must approve also policies and procedures for that area. And there's a little bit of variance between the areas around the state. We are LWIA 17. That's our area. There are 23 around the state, so we're not the only one. But some of them cover a lot of counties. Some of them just cover one county, depending on how large they are. But they all have slightly different policies about the kinds of services they provide, how they work together as a group. They're allowed some flexibility in policies about the services that they provide. The WIOA board is made up currently of 51% local businesses. That is not going to change, so that has to be private business partners. It's also got a labor and community-based organization representation of 20 agencies. And then the agencies that are required to participate are the ones I mentioned earlier that are required members of the board. The minimum number of members will be 19 in the future under the Opportunities Act. It currently is over 30. In our area, in order to meet all the requirements of the board and who's eligible to serve on the board, we have 32 members right now. Some people can serve dual hats. So if you're, for example, on our board, if you are you happen to work at an organization that is a private business, but you also are in the economic development. In some way, you might serve with two hats, but that doesn't happen a lot. And so we do have 32 members right now on our board, which is a pretty large board. There are opportunities for you to get involved. Yes.
Do you mind questions as from
no,
the board?
No, I go ahead while we go along. That's fine.
I just had a quick question. Had you considered getting anybody on the board that has something to do with intellectual and developmental disabilities, for example?
The agencies, DOORS serves on the board, but they don't, that is not their total population that they serve. Obviously, they serve people with other disabilities as well. And we have not considered that. I mean, they're certainly eligible. We just have not ever considered that as a specific targeted group to look for recruitment. Our major issue is not the public agencies that serve on the board because they represent a broad, we have someone that represents seniors, one that represents et cetera, et cetera. The difficulty for us has been getting the private businesses on board to get over the 51%. But certainly it's really not, at this point, there are really no people that are just individuals on the board. They represent agencies or companies.
Peter, I served on the board, the WIOA board, I served on it for 10 years, but I haven't for the last five, and I don't know that they replaced that capacity when I'm off the board.
Yeah. It just seems conspicuously absent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not related necessarily to people, individual. It's not an individual's kind of board, it's agencies or companies that are represented on the board, because the intention obviously is the connection from the employer to people that serve people who need to be employed. But certainly, there are work groups, and I can talk a little more about that. But there are also work groups underneath the board itself that would be like there's a youth council, which actually is no longer required, which is our group of community people that work with youth. They could be individuals as well as agencies.
Mm-hmm. Darlene, did you say people fill out applications if they're interested, or organizations, if they're interested in being on the board?
Yes. Yeah. And the board would make a decision about whether they could join based on if there's a vacancy or a need for that particular representation or, whatever. Yeah. The new law, this is the change that will affect people that you work with or your primary populations you're concerned with. The new law emphasizes inclusion for mainstream employment for persons with disabilities. And as you know from your last couple of meetings, the Employment First is a big push that the state of Illinois is working on with regard to that. The other pieces of that have to do with they cannot be sheltered workshops unless you still can provide some group type employment opportunities like that, but there really has to be a reason to do it in that way. More of the training has to be individualized, including even, for example, customizing jobs for people specifically. So Doors, for example, will be working with people who need customized work and individualized way of setting up positions at companies that they can, you know, for positions that people can do. There will be more on the job training, which sometimes happens now already in our community. I know DSC does some of that. There's other organizations. PACE does some of that, where they do on-the-job coaching, things like that. We have some of those already set up in our community. But there will be emphasizing more and more of that. And there is a requirement for percentages of the money that comes down now that has to be targeted to these particular activities. They're really pushing that, and they're specifying a minimum amount of the funding has to be used for that purpose. There has to be choices for the employee as well as the employer in terms of, you know, just like any regular employment situation, the employee can choose what jobs to apply for, and the employer has a choice of who they choose to hire. So they're just trying to mainstream this as much as possible in all ways. And commensurate wages, of course, for jobs that are being done that would be commensurate. The other things that would probably be affecting some of the folks that you work with would be the focus right now in our youth programming is we are required by the law to spend 30% of the funding that comes to the WIA for out-of-school youth programs. So there's a certain amount of money that we get every year. It's our youth grant, and a certain amount of that money, which right now is about 30%, is required to be spent on youth that are out of school, which means they have been either dropped out, or they dropped out and went back and then dropped out. You know, different, but out of school. So whatever their situation, they do not yet have a high school degree, and that has changed entirely. So under the Opportunities Act, we are going to be required to spend 75% of our budget for youth on out-of-school youth. And the reason for that has been the focus on the youth that are transitioning, not only from programs like kids with developmental disabilities that are transitioning to adult services, but a lot of youth are transitioning out of high school and really have no skills to get jobs. Employers complain about that, but they're really focusing on how that bridge can be made in whatever way. They're considering out-of-school youth to be youth between the ages of 16 and 24. So they've raised the age from 21 to 24. It's a little bit higher. And we see this with other programs that we operate for DCFS, for example, kids that are wards of the state that are transitioning out to be on their own when they're no longer wards of the state. It's difficult to find work for. They don't understand work. They haven't been given enough skills to get work, and often they don't do very well for the first several years that they're out, and so they end up homeless. There's a lot of other issues that come about because of that. If you don't have steady employment, persons returning from prison, and I know both the boards have been talking about that lately as well. People coming back from prison a lot of times do not have job skills that are needed for the current work that's out there. They may have been in prison for 10 years and don't know the current technology, you know, all kinds of different things. And so their focus is going to be specifically on that barrier. Persons with disabilities, and this is one you're probably familiar with. So that already happens through Doors, but the kinds of services will be a little different. Youth entering employment for the first time. This is the kids that aren't out of school but that are graduating from school, still with their first job are having a difficult time. They are lacking in what's called soft skills, a lot of them. You know, do you show up on time? Do you dress properly? Do you know how to deal with conflict in the workplace? Those kind of skills. And so that's things that we'll be focusing on a little bit more. Persons with low literacy skills, and this might be both actually reading literacy, which there are some services in the community for, but not as much for adults. And then persons with other kinds, like they also consider financial literacy to be part of that. So people that are having lots of trouble with credit, people that don't understand budgeting or credit card usage, credit histories, things like that. So they're going to be focusing more on those barriers as well, because sometimes people get themselves in situations where if they have those barriers, it's really hard to find a job because they're dealing with those things. They have that history. persons that are unemployed for a long time. And you may or may not know that our unemployment statistics don't count all of these people. So our unemployment rate across the country is going down. In our county also has been relatively low compared to some areas of the country. We do have a good history of that. But we also have many people that we know have been unemployed for a significant amount of time. And once they drop off the unemployment records, because they're no longer eligible for unemployment for that length of time, they're no longer counted as unemployed because there's no way to count them. We don't know. We don't keep track of them after that to know whether they got a job or didn't get a job. And so there is a higher percentage of people in our community that are unemployed than shows up in the unemployment records. So because they have, they are wanting to target all of these youth, which before were not necessarily, certainly we could serve them, but they weren't necessarily putting money into that and saying, we prefer that you serve them. They have changed the way that we do our outcomes. And they're saying the kinds of things that we were asking you to collect as outcomes have changed and are different now as well. The other big change that's happening is that at the federal level, the WIOA Act is being tied to other federal initiatives. So you've heard perhaps that the Housing Authority is got a program now called Moving to Work. And it's locally, our Housing Authority is moving to an entirely vouchered system. So there will be public housing, but all of their other housing will be vouchers. And if you are receiving a voucher, you will be asked to work if you're able. And we just heard that comment from someone who applied today. And the whole intention is that if you can work, you should be working. And so they are basing, just like they did with TANF several years ago when people collected TANF, and then they started the rules about you have to be looking for work, you have to be trying to find work. If you're not, then we will not be giving your TANF payments anymore. So they're moving this programs also to that connection. They're also wanting to tie the WIOA funding with regional economies now, not necessarily just with Champaign County, but we cover the region of four counties. But even for the purposes of that, they like larger regions. So, for example, we have one of our grants right now has to do with trying to help people find jobs in manufacturing, because manufacturing is a big need in the whole state of Illinois. The state of Illinois offered an RFP to regions, not to any one area, but to regions. And so we partnered with six other areas to apply for Central Illinois. And the idea was to train people for open manufacturing positions. And they, in our area, in our particular region, we've only had two people that have qualified for that and wanted to do that. In some other areas, they've had more success because they have different kinds of programming. We have one client of ours actually right now from our area that's going to Decatur for college because the classes are set up in a different sequence that he can do the classes in that way. So we spread out over a region as well as just our little area. And so that's all about, again, not siloing things, trying to spread out to broader areas, give people opportunities to move around, make the pie bigger, so to speak. The other thing that it hasn't been totally looked at yet, but is probably going to be looked at after this first year, you know, after the first year you implement something, then you learn some problems that are coming up with it. These are some changes that already are going to be coming up that I'm aware of that, you know, really haven't been thought about too much. One is that the changes that are happening with the WIOA Act are probably going to have some connection with or will affect other kinds of programs that are not involved with workforce at all. One of them being supportive housing and disability benefits, because you're now being asked to earn income, and we all know that if you get to a certain level of earned income, you lose those benefits. So it's the same thing that happened with TANF, and they didn't realize it until two years into the requirement that they were now forcing people into poverty because they made enough money that they could no longer collect their health insurance benefit through Medicaid or those kind of things. And so they had to figure out all those new rules. So those things will affect, I'm sure, people with disabilities, because that will be, they want people with disabilities to work, and then at what point do you lose your benefits because you have too much income? The one thing that's kind of good about that, one of the good changes about this is that the services we've provided in the past, all of the services that the WIA has offered have been related to income. and whether you are a dislocated worker. So if you've lost your job, or if you are a low-income person up to the poverty level, you are eligible for services. That's allowed us to serve a lot of folks, and that's wonderful. But there are always people that are just a little bit above that that make what we call not a living wage. They're minimum wage folks, or they're working two part-time jobs and don't have benefits, things like that. The new law does not have income guidelines for anything except two of the criteria. So these are the conditions under which someone can now enter the program. They need to be a school dropout. They need to be within the age of compulsory school attendance but have not attended school for at least the most recent complete school year. The recipient of a secondary school diploma or is recognized equivalent who is a low income and basic skills deficient or English language learner. So in that case, yes, they have to have an income guideline for that. But the dropouts do not, the ones that are not in school do not. They are subject to the juvenile or adult justice system, which is, that's new, that's a new addition, and they do not have income guideline. A homeless individual, a pregnant or parenting individual, an individual with a disability, or the other one with an income guideline is a low-income individual who needs additional assistance to enter or complete an educational program. So they're just people that need additional skills to get a job. But those are income-based. So we're going to be looking for more ways that we can partner with businesses to do on-the-job training and apprenticeships. And the disconnect here has been between formal education and actual jobs. The employers are saying that when kids graduate from schools or when even college kids graduate, they don't have the skills that are necessary for the specific jobs they need them for. And then there's this learning period of up to a year where they have to actually do on-the-job training or not hire them because they really, you know, they can't do the job yet. And so those are the kinds of things we're going to be negotiating with employers. So if you're talking about people with disabilities, if you know employers that would be willing to hire, but they need some help getting people started, we could help with funding for that. That will be included in some of our funding now. And the results orientation, this goes back to what Julian was talking about earlier at the earlier meeting, is that the accountabilities are built in now to results. They don't really care how many kids you serve or how many low-income people you see. They want to know what happened to them. Did they get a job, and did they improve their incomes? So all the activities are going to be related to some kind of outcome. So that part is good. The system is going to be accountable so that not only is the WEA accountable for whether they got a job, but also IDS will be responsible for whether they got a job. And also DOORS is responsible if they're seeing the person if they got a job. And so we're all going to be keeping the statistics together. And that will make it a little bit easier, I think, to not be so siloed. That it will encourage us to build together for the outcomes. So that's kind of the changes. The rules have not been published yet. We will get training on the beginning rules in May, which is a very short time frame because the programs all have to start in July. So July 1st, the law takes effect, and we will be starting to be held accountable for those things. So the training for the administrative rules to follow up the law will be happening in May. And, you know, with any new law, there's always a period of a year or two where you have to work out all those details of, here's what we'd like you to do, but we haven't had that come up yet, so we didn't make a rule about it, and then they have to make a rule about it. It's kind of like law. So, anyway, I'd be happy to answer questions. That's kind of just the basic overview of what's happening and why it's happening and how it will affect some of the folks that you guys work with.
Okay. Thank you, Darlene. Questions from the board? Yeah, I just have one. Darlene, how would you envision our board being involved in this and our local DD agencies?
Well, a couple of things could happen, and that could be that it would be possible for people that are agencies that are working with people that have employment issues. Certainly there could be a partnership. As Dale was mentioning, he sat on the board for a while, so there are opportunities for people in the community that work with disabilities or that are disabled to sit on the board to give input into how things are happening. There are opportunities to talk to us if you're a potential employer. So if you know people that might be good employment situations, that you could come and talk with our office about how we would work out some kind of apprenticeship program or on-the-job training program or coaching program, something like that. And some of our money could be used to support that. There's youth providers that provide year-round services to youth, and now, as I mentioned, more of those will be out-of-school youth, so for kids that are transitioning. And they're moving into adult services, they may not have, you know, whenever you move from the school system into adult services, mm-hmm. sometimes it's not quite what you expected, and mm-hmm. you lose some things that you might have had in terms of supports earlier. But the PUNS database sounds, I'm thinking there are people on there that would be saying they're interested in their preferences of having some employment, and maybe there would be ways that we could help with that. We could certainly form a work group to see about those kind of things. If it involves paying for training for someone to obtain a job that is currently unemployed or underemployed, then we could talk about using some of our funding for those things.
How does your funding work?
It comes down through the federal government through the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity.
Okay.
And it's given to the local WEA offices.
Okay.
And that's just our money. Of course, DOORS gets it through. It's all through the state, comes down. But ours is, it's federal money that comes down through DCEO for WEA services, which provide training and job search activities for people. Okay. And so this changes the rules of what kinds of activities and job search things we can do and with which populations.
Thank you.
Darlene, I just had a quick question, and then you mentioned something about that some of your funding could be used to help incentivize employers, mm-hmm. I guess. How much money do you have for that purpose, and what are the forms that those incentives might take?
The incentives might take really basically an agreement between the employer and our office about identifying some potential employees, working out what would be required to get them employed, and then paying for their full or part of their salary for the up to maybe 6 months of their employment while they get trained. And employers are always a little nervous because then it's like, well, I have to hire the person at the end. What if they don't work out? Well, that's a probationary period. You would know that at the end of the 6 months if they're going to work out or not. It's not that you have to hire them day one and then can, you know, be guaranteed that they will make it. If they don't make it, then they're on probation. So that's always the hesitation of employers, as you're saying, if I take this person and hire them as a trainee and you pay for the first 6 months, then I have to guarantee that I'll hire them. And what we're saying is no. What we're saying is we'll help pay for the first 6 months during that time which you are evaluating them. And if it's not working, let us know. Don't wait till the end of the 6 months and say, oh, it didn't work.
And how much money do you have for this purpose in your contract?
We do not have a budget yet, so I cannot tell you that. I can tell you for our local area for our four counties receives approximately $2.5 to $3 million a year, but that also includes, I mean, that's everything. That's operating all the different programs we do. The youth program that we are currently, there's an RFP currently out for the youth providers, of which just you might be interested, Cunningham Children's Home has been a provider of ours for many years. It runs about $300,000, $350,000 a year. And they provide year-round. There's a requirements of what you have to do to be a youth provider. You have to be able to provide mentoring, job search assistance. Some of them do employment experiences, so those would be kind of small work experience things, not for the whole year, but for like over the summer or for part-time for a few weeks, job shadowing, different things like that. So there's requirements in the RFP, but those are the current programs we're running now. But there will be additional ways of organizing the money based on what they tell us we need to do.
Thank you, darling. Joyce.
You said that 75% of your funding is for 16 and youth between 16 and 24. Okay, so
currently we have a budget of about $350,000 for youth funding.
Okay.
So right now, just to give you an idea, 47% of our current youth that we're serving this year are out of school youth. The requirement for us right now is 30%. We are serving 47%. The requirement starting July 1st will be 75% of that money has to be used for out of school youth.
Okay, so that means the other categories that you have here, that's 25% of your money for those other categories?
That's youth.
Okay.
We have three different, well, we have several different funding streams, but the three main ones are the youth programming, there's an adult line item, and there's a dislocated worker line item.
All right.
So we get three separate grants for those things.
Okay.
Deb, did you?
No, she has the same question.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Darlene, I'm sure.
I think Mark
wanted to say a question. Mark, did you? No. Okay. And Darlene, I'm sure we're going to be talking more about this and working with you on this.
Okay. The other thing, which just, again, it came up in the other meeting, and I thought at the time this was probably because I mentioned it, is the outcomes, the system outcomes. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that if you set up system outcomes for the services that are being provided, that encourages people to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a goal of your board. So,
okay,
that would be.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, next on the agenda is for information only, the draft of the Mental Health Board, their February 18th meeting. And then we have to have agenda item 7. We have to have approval of the DD board minutes from our February 18th meeting. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
Motion to approve.
Okay. A second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. President's comments? I don't have any. we just look forward to looking at the proposals and the budget for the next year. Peter, executive report.
Just a couple things. One is, I really want to thank Darlene for presenting tonight. Originally, we had scheduled Kevin Casey, who's the Director of Developmental Disabilities. For the board's information, Kevin Casey was not reappointed. Okay. He's gone. I don't, anyway, thank you for that, Lynn. The other thing is that Mark Doyle, did he resign?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Mark Doyle is no longer with the governor's office, it's when you have a transition in administrations. You know, one of the things that we've been trying to do is build relationships with those people, and now we're back to ground zero. The other thing I would mention is that actually Lynn and I attended the NACBED, which is the National Association of County Developmental Disabilities Directors and Mental Health Directors, and there was a lot of really good information that really supports the directions that this board has taken in terms of being aggressively moving forward on the CMS changes and focusing on integration, looking at what we do through the lens of integration, and as you heard from the WEA report. That Darlene gave, that you know, the focus is there on integration also, so it's happening, folks.
Any questions for Peter? Okay, thanks, Peter. Staff report, Lynn.
I have a couple things to add to the staff report. We had an ACMI DD subcommittee call last week and learned that Tony Records is retiring. So there are some big losses at the state level, and it's not clear how they'll stay motivated to follow through with the LIGAS consent decree, especially, I think there's not going to be a PUNS draw. That was the rumor. But now, didn't Carol tell us that, I think it was, well, someone from the state told her they're not going to do a PUNS draw because they've met the benchmarks and exceeded the benchmarks. So that's really unfortunate. So I don't know what we're going to see next at the state level, but that was news from that call. I think there's also, you know, that might be the only DD-related addition to my staff report. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? No? Okay. Thanks, Lynn.
Okay.
Agency information. Any?
Hello, my name is Felicia Guler, and I'm the Director of Children's Services at Developmental Services Center. And I don't think that I've ever really had to talk to this group about what I'm going to talk about right now, which is, as you know, in the upcoming budget that the governor has set forth, there is a proposed $23 million cut to early intervention services. And one of the ways that the agency, the Bureau, and DHS is talking about dealing with this cut is by changing the eligibility criteria from 30%, which is right now in the state of Illinois, if a child has a delay of 30% or more, they qualify for EI services. So right now they're talking about changing that to 50%, which will be devastating for about 20,000 children and families. So I brought some talking points today, and probably what I'll do is just leave them if you wanted to look at them, regarding the impact that this will have on children and families. The state is saying that anywhere between 50 and 75% of the children who qualify now for services will no longer qualify. There are only three other states in the District of Columbia who have this level of eligibility. Most states have 25% as their cutoff. So Illinois is behind anyway, and now this will put us in the bottom fifth. The other point that I wanted to make is that if you think about a 50% delay for a two-month-old, that's 1 month. If you think about a 50% delay for a 36-month-old, that's 18 months. So the gap only grows, and it will not only have an impact on children and families now, but it will really stress the system later on. So I'll leave these talking points if you want to read them. Just wanted to let you know and be aware of the situation.
That'd be definitely, Felicia, lead the talking points. I think one of the things that we'll want to talk about as a board is how we address some of these issues, and we're all on the same page in terms of how we address them and how we describe what we think the impact is going to be.
Okay.
So talking points are going to be very helpful.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Alicia, what do you think the impact's going to be on the 3-5 program that the school provides?
I think that it will further limit children's access to that. I think that where it will have its greatest impact is in kindergarten. Right now, there is much support for the 3-5 for early childhood education, but we know that children who are not identified earlier, then they're not even on the radar for 3-5. So it's just going to kind of continue to snowball, and then they'll show up in kindergarten, and no one will know what to do with them. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And really, the Bureau is looking at this as not just an early intervention issue, but it really is an early childhood education mm-hmm. issue.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. Thanks, Felicia. Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura Bennett from Developmental Services Center. And I just have a brief announcement, and fortunately it's a little bit more uplifting than what Felicia just mentioned, but I spoke to the Mental Health Board, and I wanted to make sure that we extended an invitation to the DD Board about an upcoming movie premiere from DSC's Prompting Theater. That is on Tuesday, April 21st at 7:30 p.m. at the Art Theater. And our troupe is presenting their movie of Who Stole My Hutu Futu Butu Ba? It is an adaptation of Dr. Seuss songs, and it lasts approximately an hour. And it's as a result of a collaboration with the Champaign Movie Makers, which is a collective of professionals, amateurs, and students who are involved in the filmmaking process. And it also included community actors in addition to our troupe. It was filmed in Champaign locations, Parkland College, County Market, Sleepy Creek Vineyard, parks, cornfields, all over town. So our guys were out and about and being filmed there. And then finally we have a second showing that is Saturday, April 25th at 12:30 p.m. And did I say April both times? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, mm-hmm. I made a mistake last time. So anyway, just want... I was just going to say that. The Tuesday event is a premiere, and it is black tie. So we will be in our formal attire, and we encourage other individuals to join us with that. So thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Laura. Okay, any... yes. Welcome. Thanks, Jennifer. That is a that's another serious one. Okay, any other agency reports or information? Okay, financial report is in our book. Any questions on the financial report? Okay, then we have to have next we have to approve claims and have a motion on approving the claims in the report. Is there a motion?
I move we accept these as presented.
Okay. Thanks, Troy. Second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion passes. New business. This was very informative. On page 25, we have a list of applicants who are applying for funding for this coming year. So that gives you an idea of who's applied for funding and the amount that they've requested. Are there any questions from board on that? We'll be spending a lot of time, more time talking about these. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that gives us a good idea of where we are. Okay, next agenda item. This also was an issue at the Mental Health Board. We have, there's a decision memo from Peter on page 26 about there were two agencies that we funded in the past that did not get their applications in on time. You'll see the letters from the executive directors of the two agencies. It was essentially, I think Peter said it really well, it was just essentially they didn't get him in on time for reasons, and that's about all you can say about it. So we're looking at, apparently this has been done in the past, we're looking at accepting these proposals, the issue of the board of accepting these proposals in consideration for allowing them to have late submissions. And you'll see the note from Peter. Peter, I don't know if you have anything more to add to that.
Not really. The only thing I can tell you is that the Mental Health Board addressed this and agreed to accept it. It was a split vote, 4-3. In addition, we added language that essentially said that this will not happen again, and that this does not represent a change in policy, and that when I send the letter out concerning this, that I make it real clear that they were bad.
That this is a one-shot deal. I'll have a motion regarding this. Do we have a motion on considering late submission?
Make a motion to approve acceptance of the applications received. Okay. To consider.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
Yes. I'm not necessarily going to vote against this. However, I think that the way that it has been put forward before has allowed people to get their applications in on time. I realize that some things can happen and people might not get them in on time, but what I want to say about this is simply that I will keep that in mind when funding decisions do come through. So I'm not going to say no at this point. However, I will keep that in mind when I decide what I will do as far as voting for those particular items.
Any other discussion? Let me do Deb and then Gary.
Oh, it came out with that? Okay. I sat in on the Mental Health Board meeting, at least for the portion of this discussion, and I just wanted to make certain that I understood correctly that there is a precedence for this, that there have in the past been late submissions that have been given consideration, just as these are up for consideration now, or were there?
Yes, there have been. I don't remember if this board has done that, but
no.
The Mental Health Board has
okay.
done that.
We have not. So as far as I know, I've been on the board all this time, and I can't remember ever doing that.
Okay.
Okay, Gary.
Thank you. Just a question, maybe Peter can help me. What are we talking about magnitude of dollars? Do we know exactly what these two grants might be?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, tell. Turn on your microphone.
So on the chart on the page before, they're each asking for the same level of funding as they have in FY15, so 10,000 for autism and 86,475 for UCP's vocational services.
And it seems like the feeling of the board is just like the Mental Health Board, there's some hesitancy. And I think, as Peter mentioned, I think the idea that putting in a letter that this doesn't imply a change in policy, I think that captures sort of some of our hesitancy on the board. So, Peter, I think we would like to do that as well for this board, that language.
If we pass it,
that language. Okay, any other discussion? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Opposed?
No. Okay. I said I wasn't gonna vote against it, and then I did.
Okay. Motion carried. You're entitled.
Thank you. I knew it was passive, so.
Okay, the next item on the list is integration of transition successes, and I think this is a new initiative from the board, a new agenda item from the board to sort of highlight. We talk a lot about transition and integration, and this sort of highlights what we're doing in the community to further that vision. And I think it also gives agencies a good opportunity to report on some of the things they're doing in terms of integration. And that's just it's nice recognition, I think, as well for the agencies. So are there any agencies that want to report on any moving individuals more integrated into the community that happened in the last month, I guess, or 2 months? Okay.
Jennifer Knapp from Community Choices. Two different things to report. One is a very exciting transition. There's a young woman who has been living in a temporary housing situation due to a variety of terrible circumstances that have happened to her, and she is actually moving into the HUD, as it's called, at DSC. And Community Choices will provide support services, and they'll provide housing, and so we're really, really excited. She's mostly concerned now with her wish list. Of the things that she still needs for her new apartment. So she is incredibly excited, and it's been a good experience to have Community Choices and DSC work together. So that's exciting to share. The other thing is we have a young man who is working for the first time at an employer who is a new employer. So it's a consignment shop in Mahomet. They've never had an employee, and they have hired a young man that we're working with. So it's actually a learning curve for him and them. And I've actually had more calls from them in terms of setting up employment of, okay, wait, what about taxes and, you know, all those things. So they're pretty excited and especially happy that the snow has stopped, because apparently people do not go into consignment shops in the winter. So there you go.
That's great. Those are great. What a difference in the lives. Yeah.
Hi, Jennifer Carlson again from DSC. Want to piggyback on Jen's comment about the person that's moving in on Friday. We're super excited to be giving her that opportunity. I had the pleasure of giving her a tour of her apartment, and this woman's enthusiasm to have her own place is amazing. One of the first things she said to me that just really, you know, hit a chord with me was, oh my God, I have my own pantry. I mean, she was so excited about her refrigerator and her pantry and her, I mean, just every room was super exciting to her. So we are also very happy to be working with Community Choices to provide this opportunity for her. Last month, I talked to you about the Mahomet Silla opening. We've made a lot of physical plant progress in the last month. People picked the paint for their bedrooms, and we have a rainbow of colors, and closets have gone up, and doors have gone up, and we're making a lot of progress there. One of the more challenges that we have right now is working with DHS on an award for one of the individuals that will be living in the home. Her medical needs are going to be very different than most of the people that receive SILA services, so we are having to ask for nursing support to be in the home almost 24 hours of the day in order to meet her medical needs. So it's a very different model than what we have done in the past. So we're working on that, and once we have an answer on that, we'll be able to work on hiring for that home. But things are moving along nicely for it. And I just want to say I'm really glad that this agenda item is on the docket every month. It's really nice to hear the great things that people are doing. So thank you.
Jennifer, I have a question.
Yes.
I know in the past it's been when people move, there's certain things like furniture or whatever that don't have a funding stream. So those are the kinds of last-minute things that it's hard to find funding for. How do you address that?
A lot of people will bring stuff from their own home. They'll bring their bedroom furniture. The agency will provide it. You okay. do get a $2,500 startup fee when you open a new home. So each okay. person will have $2,500 to go along with that. And we're very resourceful with doing a lot with a little. So I can... Yeah, we'll go to the Mahomet consignment store.
Yeah, there yeah. you go.
Not when it's the winter, though.
Like, help you with that.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
I want Annette. To echo what Jennifer said. This is a nice way to end the meeting. Annette Becker, DSC, and I'd like to share about a young man who recently gained employment. To give you a little background, about 2 years ago, Caterpillar Logistics approached DSC's business operations to take on the overflow that they just physically did not have the capacity to complete at their facility. So they looked at our Clark Road manufacturing plant and decided it was a good match. So initially we had staff and temp workers that we hired through a local temp agency to complete the overflow. And when we initially started, we did about 14,000 parts. We had to meet the quota every day, and we had to make zero mistakes. If you made a mistake, the whole order was returned, and it had to be quality checked 100% to look for other mistakes. So the stakes were pretty high. So again, we started with business operations staff and temp workers. And then as people we supported learned the jobs, we started using fewer and fewer temp workers. In the first 6 months, we went through about 30 temp workers because they either weren't fast enough or they made too many errors. Again, we now have about 8 temp workers, and then about anywhere from 10 to 14 of the people we support working together. We call it the cat room, and it's the most sought-after job. Everybody wants to know when they get to work in there. So the individual that recently was hired at Caterpillar Logistics full-time was one of the first people that started learning the jobs. And there are about 20 different jobs mm-hmm. that we get on a daily basis. And now we produce, we have to put out anywhere from 30,000 to 40,000 parts per day. So again, it's a pretty fast pace. So he's learned every job. He's learned how to not only work at a high enough rate of speed, but also with an accuracy that is acceptable. About a month and a half ago, we approached him to apply with the temp agency who hires people for Caterpillar Logistics, which is a separate temp agency. They were very impressed. He passed the speed and accuracy test at Caterpillar Logistics with flying colors, and so they hired him. He started the very next day, and so it's wonderful. Again, it's you know, our first person that hopefully will be able to move on. Ironically, because he was paid a piece rate when he was at our Clark Road facility, he actually made over $12.50 an hour. And I think one week in particular, he made about $12.75 an hour. So his starting salary at Caterpillar Logistics is not that high, but he is working full-time and he does get benefits. So now we're working on some of the other skills that go along with that. He said he misses the team at Clark Road. And, you know, so I think until he really makes a connection with other people, we'll be working on other skills. But he really learned a lot. And hopefully we'll be one of their top performers.
Thank you. Great. Thanks, Annette.
That's great.
Fantastic. Any other? Okay. We're on old business, the Alliance for the Promotion of Acceptance, Inclusion, and Respect. Lynn?
Just that we did one more draft after this, after what you see, just to bring the readability of the text.
Okay.
And it's submitted.
Okay, and it's in the book.
Yeah, but
right.
After that, only one more.
Oh, okay, got it.
But it's really fun.
Okay. Any questions? About that. Okay, and there's a report from Barb Reznor on an update on where we are with next year's Disability Expo, which is October 17th. And I know the subcommittees have started to meet. Any announcements from the board? Joyce or Deb? No? Okay, then we can adjourn. Thank you, everybody, for coming tonight and participating. Thank you again, Darlene.
Yeah, I hope it's not too busy tomorrow. They said, like, you can walk in anytime if you have business. Well, there was no line today. because of Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Nice job.
Thank you.
Did you learn anything?
I'm proud of you.
Are you going over to that phone just